As the U.S. sends troops to the Middle East, diplomatic and military maneuverings have dominated the news. But for many Muslims, an important subtext involves religion. Many say a war in Iraq raises sensitive issues, questions about whether this action could be perceived as a crusade, for example, and whether it would spark a jihad. NPR's Barbara Bradley Haggerty reports.
Qasr Talat was born in Egypt and moved to the United States with her family when she was a child. Now a doctor and a U.S. citizen, she has an insider's view of the American political system. Talat believes that if the United States invades Iraq, the action will be driven by national security and politics, that this is not a war on Islam. And yet, she says, for many Muslims, this action has religious overtones.
I think that President Bush's rhetoric in terms of using religious dialogue in his speeches, calling people he doesn't like evil, using biblical terms, sort of recreates the crusade-like atmosphere that we're the forces of God going to battle against the evildoers, the heretics.
Talat says Muslims are keenly aware of who is close to the president, people like evangelist Franklin Graham, who gave the prayer when Mr. Bush was inaugurated. Graham once called Islam, quote, a very evil and wicked religion. Dina Shahada, an environmental expert who will soon move back to Egypt, says Americans don't realize the impact of the president's pledge to bring democracy to the region or to free people from a false Islam. She says it evokes memories of a Muslim world divvied up and put under the authority of Western Christian countries.
I think this would immediately bring back very vivid memories of the colonial era. Most of these countries had been colonized before, and I'm sure when the British came in, they had very lofty ideals that they proclaimed, and it was at the end of the day a form of imperialism, and I think people will very much perceive this as a second instance of of colonialism.
Some of that perception comes from what many Muslims see as a selective foreign policy by the United States, says Hussein Haqqani. Haqqani is a Pakistani scholar at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. He says many Muslims say Israel has violated United Nations resolutions, just as Iraq has. Yet it's Iraq that is being sanctioned. And they wonder why the U.S. is taking a hard line on Iraq's weapons, but not on North Korea's.
Iraq happens to be Muslim, predominantly Muslim. North Korea happens to be non-Muslim. So then people start saying, what's going on? Why is there that whenever there is a conflict situation or a choice, the choice that is made is somehow against us rather than for us? And that makes Muslims somewhat uneasy.
But not all Muslims. Fadhil Issa, a Shia Muslim, has lived under Saddam Hussein's rule. Issa was an Iraqi teenager when he was recruited for the Iran-Iraq War in 1981. He deserted the army but was captured and thrown into prison. During his 11 years of detention, he saw many forms of torture: hot irons applied to prisoners' chests, tongues cut out, parents forced to watch as their children were killed. Issa's nightmare occurred when a prison official broke his back. From then on, he had to be carried on a stretcher until he came to the United States and underwent surgery. Issa finds ample justification in Islam for waging a war on a man who would torture and kill his people.
We have a tradition from the Prophet that it is easier for God to see the destruction of the Kaaba, the most holy place for Islam, than to see one drop of bloodshed. That is a sin. This man has shed oceans of blood.
Quoting the Quran, he says a murderer should be killed. Shahzad Bhatti, a Harvard Law School graduate who runs an internet business, says everyone he knows believes Saddam Hussein to be a despicable person and not a good Muslim. But, he says, many do not believe it's America's job to remove him. If U.S. troops go into Iraq, he says many Muslims will feel the need to respond. And that raises a delicate issue: the Islamic concept of jihad.
Not jihad in the sense of call to arms, but jihad in the sense of a struggle against injustice. So in this case, it would be organizing protests, participating in those protests, putting pressure on elected policymakers, both here and other members of the Security Council, organizing legitimate resistance movements to anything that results in the loss of innocent lives. And it also means that we bear a burden to resist regimes like Saddam Hussein's.
Although he concedes Muslims haven't made much headway in that area. Now, it may be true that a majority of Muslim protesters will wage a peaceful jihad if American troops enter Iraq, says Pakistani scholar Hussein Haqqani. But he says a war in Iraq would radicalize some Muslims and make recruiting for terrorist organizations easier. Given that there are about 1 billion Muslims in the world, he says the pool of disgruntled people could be quite large.
If 1% of that 1 billion felt that they had sympathy for extremist views, then we are dealing with 10 million people. And if 10% of those 10 million were a little more active in pursuing those extreme beliefs and views, then we are dealing with a potential pool of 1 million people from which extremist groups and terrorists can recruit. So it's just a matter of sheer numbers.
While most Muslims say that Islam and terrorism are utterly incompatible, James Turner Johnson, who teaches religion and politics at Rutgers University, is among those who point to a historical basis for holy war in Islam. He says the jihad of individual duty was triggered when a non-Muslim army invaded the Ummah, or Muslim homeland. It allowed unconventional warfare, he says. Everyone was supposed to fight the non-Muslim aggressor any way he could. The doctrine fell into disuse until recent years. Today, he says, some radicals interpret U.S. presence in the Middle East, particularly in Saudi Arabia, as an invasion of the Muslim world, and for them, that has triggered the doctrine of individual duty.
It was the basic argument behind assassinating Anwar Sadat as an apostate. It was the argument that was used by some, at least, in the Iranian Revolution to argue against the presence of any kind of Western influence in Iran. It's been the argument that's been used by Hamas, in particular with regard to the State of Israel.
And by Osama bin Laden in justifying al-Qaeda terrorist attacks. While some believe that radicals will launch terrorist attacks on the U.S. no matter what, the amount of support they get probably will depend on what happens during the war. One potential problem, according to Juan Cole, an expert on Iraq at the University of Michigan, involves Shia shrines. There are two particularly holy shrines south of Baghdad, Najaf and Karbala. He says the U.S. military is aware of those holy places, but if American soldiers harm them in the course of fighting or afterwards, Shiites would be outraged. He says some Shiites are already organized for terrorist action, such as Hezbollah in Lebanon.
Right now, the United States' main problem is with al-Qaeda and with Sunni radicals, and the Shiite radicals have kind of subsided as a main threat, but this could revive the Shiite radicals' fervor against the United States.
While U.S. troops are moving into sensitive religious ground, Fadil Issa believes that Muslims will fall into line, especially Muslims inside Iraq. Issa says he often gets word from Iraqis who travel to Syria and Jordan. He has no doubt about how some Iraqis will react.
They're waiting with roses and wreaths of flowers for soldiers to liberate them from Saddam. I swear by God, this is the Iraqi people's words, not mine. And anyone who cares for the Iraqi people shares the same sense. And anyone who doesn't want war now is helping Saddam with his war against his people.
Perhaps, says Ivan Haddad, a professor at Georgetown University's Center for Muslim-Christian Understanding. But that welcome may be short-lived. She recalls the same thing happened when the Israeli army moved into South Lebanon in 1982. The Shiite Muslims were thrilled to be rid of Yasser Arafat.
And so they threw, flowers and rice at them. And a year later, they were having suicide bombers and trying to kill the Israelis. And the question is, how long will the Iraqis put up with the Western boot in Iraq?
Which goes to show that aside from the military, political, and diplomatic calculations the U.S. is making, it must consider one other. Whether Muslims will see an invasion of Iraq as an attack on an Islamic nation or as a necessary move to liberate the Islamic citizens of Iraq. Barbara Bradley Haggerty, NPR News, Washington.